Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is a feisty, in-your-face forward and Stanley Cup champion, Max Talbot. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What is going on, Nasty?
Not much, Regs. I just know one thing, that the flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to chop the weeds. I've been on you about this weekly. I hope you've been listening, man.
I'm all
thanks
over.
To our, yeah, you better be. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim your holes safely and efficiently. I'm talking about ball trimmers, baby. Ball trimmers. That's what I'm talking about, Riggs. Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for our audience. Use code KNUCKLES to get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Join the other 2 million men who trust Manscaped. They are here to make sure you are trimmed and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring cleaning, Riggs.
Oh, it's a good time of year.
It's a great time of year. Just ask Timmy Parr. Spring has sprung. TimmyParr.com. Spring has sprung, and Manscaped has the best tools to get you ready. I'm sick of hearing about you having to put Band-Aids all over your balls, Riggs. You got to use this thing. It's the best. Manscaped are the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming and have forever changed the grooming game and their amazing products. They are here to help you with your above-the-waist holes, too. Have you heard of their weed whacker?
I have. Got one.
I know. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes.
Oh, you gotta watch out for those delicate holes.
Yeah, you don't want to be tugging in them. No more gross nose hairs flying in the wind, which, God, that's just not what you want. The premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degrees rotary dual-blade system. Manscaped is making whacking your weeds a time to look forward to, delivering maximum confidence while providing hygiene as well, Riggs. It's important.
Oh, I look forward to it all the time.
Oh, boy. Speaking of incredible hygiene, Manscaped has formulations to keep you fresh and ready for everything that comes your way all day. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. It's starting to get hot outside, and this is crucial so your balls stop sticking to your leg, because I'm telling you what, when you said your balls are sticking down to your knees, I was thinking, oh, that's a little more information than I need, Riggs, but it's definitely the legit worst.
No one wants that.
No. You'll also find a Crop Reviver spray-on toner for your balls, which will keep you smelling fresh down there, just like spring flowers. Speaking of smelling fresh, complete your grooming game this spring with the new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. This stuff is legit, Regs, and it will have you smelling like royalty. Smell good, feel good this spring. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Knuckles at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Knuckles at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code Knuckles at manscaped.com. It's spring cleaning, baby, and your balls will thank you.
Beautiful. You got to use the right tools, Nasty.
You have to do it. You have to.
Yeah, I think the Flyers might have used the wrong tools this year. I'm not sure.
I think they were, some of the guys were given the wrong tools.
Yeah, yeah. You have to figure that out. That wraps up another season, unfortunately.
Yeah.
A little bit of a rough one, especially towards the end. A little bit of a downward spiral. But I still really believe that there's lots to look forward to going into next season. They got a lot of, you know, solid pieces there. And it's just refining, you know, each individual and finding some glue, you know, finding a couple veteran players in the offseason, I think are important and building off there is the build off.
Yeah. There's definitely some work to be done. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest, you know, and I'm sure the guys say the same thing, you know, not shitting on anyone, man. It was a crappy year. I mean, you know, guys tried hard. Things didn't work. It was just a shitty year. You can't make excuses, though. Everybody dealt with COVID, every team. But I know the guys are disappointed. You know, you talked to some of the guys, too. It sucks, man. It sucks when you know you're not going to the playoffs because that's what you play for. Even being, you know, doing what I did for so long, man, it's the best time of the year.
It really is.
You know, it's tough when you have games left and, you know, you hate to say they're meaningless, but at the end of the day, they kind of are, except for getting to see some kids play, which is good. But I'd rather be in first place and let some of these kids play to rest your veterans, knowing you're going into the playoffs. Exactly. But that's just not the case this year. So some work to be done there. And unfortunately, you're probably going to lose a couple buddies of ours that have been with the team for a long time. It's just probably going to have to happen, unfortunately. After this year, and who knows what they'll do, but I believe in these guys, and I know it was ugly at times, but you know, they'll be back, and hopefully next year we're like we said last night on the post game show with Farzi and Broads, we're guaranteeing to make playoffs because it goes every other year the last decade. So
guarantee it.
So you know, It wasn't pretty, that's for sure.
Yeah, but you know, on the bright side of it all, there is still NHL playoffs, and some really great teams, some really great players. It'd be really interesting to see how this thing goes. I mean, a guy like Connor McDavid, I mean, this guy is on fuego right now. I mean, there's no telling what level this guy can take his game to. So obviously, keeping an eye on this guy. And obviously, there's a few other guys around the league that you're going to keep an eye on for good reason, because they're elite players and they're game changers. And you know, like the Toronto Maple Leafs legitimately have a chance to win a Stanley Cup, you know. And but there's other teams that do, too. So it'd be interesting to see how this thing plays out, especially with this bizarre playoff format for these first couple rounds and then moving on. So,
it's crazy to think, like, obviously we went through this last year, you raise the Stanley Cup is still the greatest thing in the world for the guys that it was their first time. And, but like, it's a shame if Toronto did win that they can't win with fans in that place, because they've waited. So, you know, like, really for any team, but any team. That's a team that's waited a long, long time, you know, just like we have here in Philly. It's been a long time, man. But at least in the States here, they got some, you know, some fans are coming back into the building. And I was talking to Mike McKenna the other day, and I guess they're actually really bumping up the amount of people that are going to be able to come to the playoffs. If they make it to this, I think he said if they get to the second or third round, like each round is going to be more people allowed in the way they're going right now. I don't know the exact number, but he was telling me that. So it'd be nice to get more people into the stands for the guys, you know. And but when you're playing for the Stanley Cup, as you saw last year, you're playing for the Stanley Cup, and they're going to play hard no matter what. So,
yeah, no kidding.
It'll be interesting. I want to say one thing. I want to keep an eye on this Florida Tampa series, because I don't know if you've been following them at all, man, but it's been I stay ugly, but in a good way. Like, they don't like each other, those two teams right now, and they're going to be playing each other. I'm really interested in watching that one.
Yeah, these first couple rounds will be dogfights, right? I mean, these teams have played each other 9 times or something now, at least at this point, and you can keep this momentum going. So, and then it will be interesting once they kind of move on out of those rounds, how this thing works itself out, because it's new blood. You know, that rivalry is not quite there, but obviously you're still in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it'll be interesting for sure. But these first couple rounds will be really, really competitive. And I think there's going to be some upsets too. You know, I think just
dog fights.
All right, Nast. I think time we jump into our interview with Max Talbot. This interview was presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Big names are headlining this weekend's UFC 262 card, from Nate Diaz to Michael Chandler. There will be no shortage of action. And DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, has a heavyweight offer this weekend's fight with 100-1 odds. One fighter will be walking away with the belt. Will you be walking away with the cash, Nast?
I'm going to cash in.
Just pick the main event fighter you think will win, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 100-1 odds on that fighter. That's right. Bet $1 on select fighters, and if they win, you win $100. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. Don't worry if MMA isn't for you. DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds and promotions on basketball, hockey, and so much more. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code Knuckles when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 when you bet on a main card fighter to win. Place your bet and watch the fists fly this weekend. That's code Knuckles to turn $1 into $100 on select main card fighters for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 years or older, Pennsylvania only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. In partnerships with Meadows Racetrack and Casino, see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. We're so pleased this week to have our good buddy, just a little prick out on the ice, Stanley Cup champion, big goals, Max Talbot. What's up, Maxie?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing great, well, man. How are you?
I'm doing amazing. I'm very excited to be a part of this. I've been following what you guys are doing. Congrats. It's awesome.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks.
I see you got the flow going again, Max, and the sick Ron Burgundy stash, man. Is that for TV? What's going on?
I don't know. You know, I'm just letting it go. I like the change, you know, and my son's letting his hair grow with me. So, okay.
All right.
And the mustache was actually for, some TV show last night. I just told the fan, I don't know, we were going to do a mustache, because a lot of Habs are having a mustache right now. They're in a playoff run.
Yeah.
All right.
So they, you know, Petri, you see some guys are having mustache. So I challenged Guy Boucher. Remember Guy Boucher?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
The Sands and the Lightning. So I challenged him to, grow a mustache for last night's show, and he didn't. So
well, it looks good.
You got a good one, man. That's a good one. That's almost 70s pornish.
Like, yeah, that's what
it's coming around a little bit.
That's Wiggs, exactly what I was going for.
I've been telling Riles to just do that, because he's letting his hair grow too. So
yeah, letting her buck.
He's letting her buck. Can't you really can't tell it with his hat on. But anyway, Max, COVID. What are you up to these days, buddy?
I'm busy. I'm raising three kids with the wife, you know, and after having a long career, you know what it is. And it's just, they're amazing. And I got a boy that's 7, girl that's 5, and a girl that's going to be 4 soon. So it's busy. It's fun. So me and my wife put a lot of energy into that. We're back home finally after, you know, being away from most hockey players do for 15 years. And we have the grandparents around, and obviously COVID sucks, but we have about 60 acres here. So,
oh wow.
Beautiful.
We raised the chicken. I do my own honey and maple syrup.
There you go. Max Talbot maple syrup.
Yeah. Right.
You know, Sugar right. Shack. So it's cool, man. Like we're doing that. And then I, as for work, I work a little bit on TV, you know, I had 40 days this year, so it's not super busy, but I host a show with my best bud, ex-flyer Bruno Gervais.
Yeah.
So we have a show called Max and Bruno. You can check it out on YouTube, Max and Bruno, but it's in French. I don't know how many, you know, French.
National translator for the fans.
Well, hey, it's funny. when I was still with the team a year and a half ago, we went into Montreal, and believe it or not, I didn't go out, which never happens when you go to Montreal. I literally did not leave. I was exhausted for some reason. I didn't go out, but I'm flipping the channels, and there's Max and Bruno, and I'm like, I sent him a video, and I'm like, I'm watching you too, but I don't know what the fuck you're saying, man. I wish I knew.
Yeah, we were actually talking about you.
I think that's what you said. We're talking about how bad of an equipment guy you were.
So that's cool. I mean, I have a chance to work with my best friend. You know, we've been best bud for over 20 years now, and now we host a show on RDS prime time Wednesday at 7 p.m. on. So it's pretty cool. And then I work as a player agent also for CA, Creative Artist Agency, Pat Brisson.
Yeah.
It's my agent all of my career since I'm 16. And when I came back from Russia, I didn't know if I was going to keep on playing or not. And he said, if you think about stopping, I'd like to offer you a position that is player development, being part of the CA team. And I it's fun. You know, I take guys here, whatever. We recruit here in Quebec, where me and Dominic and André Rivera, we recruit guys. Or I do some development with Cole Caulfield now that just got to the Habs team. So try to make him comfortable in Montreal. Tyler Toffoli represents. So it's cool. Like right now, today, awesome. I'm doing marketing for them, you know, trying to find them cars for next year, stuff like that. And I watch it. But the job sucked this year in a way because you're in front of your computer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The COVID here in Quebec, the rinks are not open. You know, you can't bring guys to restaurants. The restaurants are closed. So the reality of the job this year has been pretty more boring than what it is normally, you know.
It sounds like outside of COVID, it's a pretty good gig.
Yeah,
it is. It's fun because exactly. I went to see, you know, Caulfield right before COVID, like in Columbus playing Ohio State. And, you know, you try to, you know, talk to Tony Granato, which was my ex-coach. He was his coach in the Wisconsin Badgers. So, you know, it's a fun gig while you develop guys. It's like coaching in a way without having flexibility in my schedule and without being at the rink every day for now. You know, it's so you watch tapes, you watch live game, and you can – have you tried this, change things up, talk about confidence. I do a lot of spirituality with them also, like try gets guys to meditate, to do nice. Breath work. I got some guys, John Uduya, started a breeding center down in Stockholm. It's called Hale Center. So now I'm getting certified breeding instructor with them. So I got some guys on that. Nice. You know, we did a Zoom call with 60 of our players, learned to breathe and stuff. So it's, these are all stuff that, you know, gets me going and try to like make these young athletes realize that they're more than just hockey players and there's something after it, you know, that hockey is not who they are, but what they do. And then after that crap, they'll retire. They'll be 30, they'll be 28, they'll be 22, 35, but the life's just starting.
Yeah.
And you know, Ralph, like you've played and it's, so that's the part of the job that I really enjoy. You know, if I can get a little bit of influence in their future and their well-being, crap, it's the little satisfaction that I get doing that.
Well, Max, like I couldn't honestly, I'm not just bumping your tires. I couldn't think of a guy that would be great at doing that job because you're, you know, you're a well-liked guy. You got a great sense of humor. You're easy to talk to. I'm sure these guys love like having you for that, because you're a funny bastard too. I shouldn't tell you that because you're always picking on me, but seriously, like that's an unbelievable job. And especially for you, I think you're going to be great at it, and you probably already are. And you know, it's funny, you watch Caulfield bury a few, like shoots puck a lot like you, huh? Like, I mean,
all the opposite. Holy cow, he can shoot the puck.
Oh my God.
He's having a good start with the Habs. It's fun. This is cool stuff. You know, we got him like a free suit that, like, you know, Sunday, like I said, the guy get him, like, you know, the guy's vaccinated and everything. We got to say that stuff now. Yeah. But, you know, so he got all Taylor suit, and he's so appreciative of it. You know, I put myself, like, when I was 20 years old, it's cool things like that. You know, it's fun. Welcome to the show, and let's go do what you do, you know, be comfortable around the ice to be comfortable on the ice, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, like you got him a suit. Christ, you guys have been in the league 5 years. You get excited when you get a free t-shirt. Oh, see him gave us t-shirts and hats. I'm like, God damn, the rich get richer, boys.
Nasty, these hockey players, we just like the free stuff. It's free stuff. Guys.
I know, it is cool. Hey, I liked it too. I like getting the free stuff.
There's nothing, but hey, thanks for the hats, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I gotta send you hats. You're right, I do. What should I send him, Riles? The Penguins color? Like, I don't know. I think I'm gonna go neutral. Yeah. Just get you black. Get you black. Riles, Riles is big on the breathing and the meditating and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. That's awesome that you're doing that, because to me, it's like, well, it's a lost art, but it's like the future of performance, right? I actually saw a pretty nice article about Duncan Keith, and he really attributes his longevity to breathing. And I don't think that every team's adopted this yet. You know, yoga is one thing, meditation is obviously a part of yoga, but the, you know, breathing. I look back on my career, and I've talked about this before. I remember fighting and like holding my breath. Like, I was like the best shape, worst shape guy, you know. It was because I was nutrition and breathing, you know. I was never taught. And you look at UFC fighters and fighters in general, and there's a huge focus on breathing, right? But I mean, I feel like in hockey, it was just kind of like we missed a super important ingredient. And you know, it's nice to see that you're doing that with the young guys, because to me, that between that and meditation, that's like the future of performance.
You can use it for so many things. And like you said, we don't know how to breathe. You know, everybody breathe through the mouth and stuff, but we're supposed to breathe by the nose for purifying, for, you know, there's a bunch of stuff. You can do spleen contraction. So you can use it different, like you can relaxation after games, just to be able to calm down instead of doing sleeping pills and beers, you know.
Yeah.
You learn how to breathe. I think it's way healthier. And you can do it in activation, just whether it's pump breathing, you can do different stuff. And I think one of the things I enjoy the most as a retiree is you can do like profound breathing, you know, and doing like, you know, the Wim Hof is one thing, you know, but you can do like the longer Wim Hof where all the voice and the freaking matrix, the noise that you get, you can just take it away. You get so deep in the breath work. It takes a lot of work, but your subconscious talking to you, and you can just be able to relax and visualize. And so to me, there's so much values into all this. And even like, it's crazy. Like, cause guys, you talk to them about, most hockey players, you talk to them about meditation. It's vague for them. They don't have time. They judge themselves because they suck at it. They're like, ah, crap, I don't like it. They try and they feel like they're not good at it. Well, you can't be bad at meditating, but still. So when you make them do breathing and breath work session and just a Wim Hof session at the start, and for them to be able to quantify and count how long they can hold their breath and how long, you know, there's a rhythm and stuff like that. That's what hockey players are used to. So you get into kind of competition. Oh, I can get better. I can hold it longer. And then they get to it. And then they get the extra meditation at the end where you just relax, your body is itchy. And like, oh, this is what meditation is.
Yeah.
So for people to start, it's the best way to start to meditate just by doing breath work. And Johnny Duya, you talk about Duncan Keith. Johnny Duya, you know, he was that guy that in the off season instead, well, he would work out, but you know, he would go in Bali and freaking in the Oriental like space, and he would try different stuff, and he would come back and he would use it as an athlete, and now he's really into that stuff, and I think it's just great for well being, for we talk about athletes and performance now, but I can talk to my mother-in-law, I can talk to my brothers, I can, because right now with the COVID, and let's be true, like, yes, people are getting vaccinated, but I think there'll be a lot of issues coming up after in the third wave by just the mental third wave of well-being. Right. And freaking, I mean, I'm talking about here in Quebec, the depression, and, you know, we have 10 women that died in last year that got killed, you know, so Jeez. Kids and stuff. So just, I feel, yeah, we'll all need a little bit of wellness and learning how to breathe and be still. And so, yeah, it's something that interests me.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And like you said, like the performance element, but just like the well-being element, and most athletes are just wired to always be in competition mode, that, you know, like you said, like it's difficult to, for people to understand meditation, because in meditation, you're essentially ceasing thought, or you're trying to, right? I mean, and most people just don't ever do that, right? So they're looking for something to do. I think the breathing, it gives you something to do, right? I mean, as you actually concentrate, you're focusing on the breath, the retention of breath, the exhalation, you know, the whole bit. Then you say, like, once it's all said and done, you can kind of just find that stillness at the end. And essentially, they kind of just fall into a meditation. But what an amazing thing to be teaching the youth. I mean, I've done some hockey camps where I was, doing some meditation and breath work with like youth hockey players. But it's not taught anywhere, right? I mean, it's not, certainly not taught through the hockey programs, but, you know, like I say, it's the future. It's like, it's ancient. And, you know, if more guys thought that way, we again, maybe prolong their careers a little bit more, again, making them better athletes. Like there's, I read a book called Breathe. You probably read it. But you know, like the fact that you could actually increase your cardiovascular just by breathing, you don't have to go do the extreme grunt work and stress your body out so much when you can actually increase the cardio by just sitting still and breathing. So a lot of amazing, you know, attributes all around there. So props to you, because to me, there's a few guys doing it, I see, but, until, you know, organizations adopt this and it's actually implemented through player development and strength and conditioning, I mean, they're missing a huge opportunity to.
Yeah, I think so. And like I said, relaxation and visualization is in deep breath working for spirituality and you know, like it's nuts. All the well-being of doing this for an athlete, you're totally right. You know, meditation, yoga, whatever it is, nutrition, it's so performance now scientifically, but it's ancient, but it's new. It's the future. You're so right. It's amazing. So it's fun to show it.
Yeah. You went from the Broad Street Bullies winning Stanley Cups, drinking beer. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, here we are talking about mindfulness and, you know, recovery, all these things that were completely ignored. But I mean, again, there's so much money in the sport and sports in general, and guys put so much stock into training and the resources that they put into it. Like, to me, it's like, if you're not doing these things, you're going to be left behind. You know, because that's where we're at with the amount of
100%. And it's crazy because it takes time too. It takes passion. It's so much more work than what we used to. We worked hard to get to where we got, for sure. 100%. We work as hard as the guy beside us. But I feel now, like the kids and the parents, like it's so much more, you know, time consuming with all these new things, right? The kids eat well, they train, they have personal skating coach, stick handling coach. It's nuts. I see at the rink, I go to the rink with my son, and it's just like,
exhausting.
It's exhausting. I have Maxie. I have clients that come in, and their kids, you know, are better than. I've got a handful that are like good players that are already, they're 14, 15, getting going away to play already, and they got the nutritionist. They've got you know, weightlifting. You know, their workout stuff. Like you said, skating, shooting. And I'm not kidding you. I mean, the parents are spending so much money, man. And sometimes like the kids come in and I'm just wondering, like, does this kid want to play baseball this summer? You know what I mean? Like, does he, or is he that into it? That, you know, that's cool. Obviously it's none of my business. I don't ask, but it's crazy. Like you said,
if they like it sometimes, cause we all talk about intense parents and stuff, and we see them around on the rink. And I feel like we saw it even more during COVID, cause you can rent like quarter ice here in Quebec. And you would see always the same parents, which it's crazy because the level of play will do this. It was already at 7, 8, 9. You see that it's doing this. But now with the COVID, you'll see the really intense parents that rented ice, they'll go like this. So there's not going to be like average players, you know, like you won't get. There's only going to be elite and the rest, I feel. And that's from parents' commitment. The parents that had time, that had the money, the resources to bring the kids to the rink. But it if the kids like it, I say, good for you. You're being part of your kid's passion, I guess, if it's done healthy. But my wife just was she did a documentary on figure skating. She was in the Olympic, my wife Cynthia, and it got on TV last week here in Quebec. And it was about, you know, they interviewed 7 ex-professional figure skater, and so unhealthy for, you know, the way that it was done. You know, a lot of them had food issues with anorexia, bulimic, the pressure of the coach. It brought to light how unhealthy that this sport was. And my wife was part of that. And she expressed her past because of to help the future, basically.
Yeah.
And there's a way to do it in a healthy way. But what saves hockey, I think, in a way is that you go to the ring and you have your buddies that saves you.
That's
true. You know, you can share experiences and be there and talk about them. So the coach, it's tougher for the coach to bully really one player. As for figure skaters, you're always with your own coach. And she the parents just bring it to the rink, and you pay a lot of money, up to like 20, 30, 40 grand per year.
Jeez.
And then you put your trust into that coach, but she's going to use all the mental thing to motivate you, and then, but it's whatever, it's unhealthy, I think, in sports in general. I think sometimes you have to do it for fun, crap.
That's
right. Yeah, especially the kids, man.
Yeah.
Oh man. So you ended up playing in Russia. Ivan Provorov wanted me to ask you about playing with Lokomotiv. He said, I just got a phone before we got on here with you, and he said, make sure you ask him about playing there. So I like, what was that like? You know, you've been in NHL your whole career. You go over for a few years.
It was nuts. Russia was just awesome. And I'm so lucky. I had I just talked about my wife, and you know, when I finished in Boston and then up and down province, Boston, my last season. And I didn't want to do that with 2 kids, you know, not being sure if you're up, down. So I got an offer from Lokomotiv, and my wife's like, let's do it. She's been in Russia before. And she's like, let's just go and live this experience. And she really pushed me. So I'm lucky I have someone that knew that was there, and she was willing to do sacrifices to let's go, let's try something new. So I went there by myself 2 months during that crazy Russian, really military camp, you know, cause the camps are nuts. It's really what they, you know, up at 7 for 10K run. And then you go in your room at 8 PM and you just work out all day. And it's just, you know, twice 2 ice session mixed with 3 gyms. And it's crazy, but you shut your brain. And to me, I like that kind of like, just when it's very tough and demanding, I was just part of the experience. So I enjoyed it. And I went there saying, if I don't like it, I'll just come back. But as soon as I got there, you know, you're there with 4 other imports, which it really bonded, you know, as Stefan Cronwell, the brother of Nicholas, Petri Kontiola played a little bit, and 2 other imports. And we just bonded, and the Russian guys were just awesome. Got there, you know, it's just get in the room, and I was crazy personalities. My guys on the ass in the shower, I'd be like, let's go. started screaming at me in Russian, and I was part of the team, you know, like the first night out, you know, I went and drank vodka, the bottle with them, sang karaoke in Russian. I didn't have any clue. And the rest was just like, I was Russian, not like that, you know, it was like, part of it. Part of the room.
I think you could fit in anywhere, man. You're that kind of guy. You're a room guy, man. I saw that in a 2.5, well, 2 and part of a 3rd year with you. So I could just imagine you being there. And we actually spoke to Chris Versteeg a couple weeks ago, and he got to play for a couple weeks with you or
Chris, whatever. Tough there.
Yeah, I know. He did the shingles. He said, you looked at him and said, dude, what is wrong with you?
Poor guy. His experience, you know, and it's, I feel like when I talk about Russia, I talk about with a lot of passion because it was so great to us.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, we were, my 3 kids, they went to school there and everything. And it was really so great. And I feel like subconsciously, I try to, you know, kind of, because you hear a lot of bad stuff about Russia. You know, Ryan Whitney came out spinning chiclets, and he's like, this. And then Chris' experience was not great. But to me, it was so good that sometimes I'd start to be like, it was amazing down there. People were great. The culture was fun. We learned a lot from that culture, actually. Like, just the Russian guys, like, they were just great. They made you feel part of the team, and they worked super hard. They want to be good, and really just good values down there. So we lived 3 years of just we learned a lot. A lot of times I was Petri Cancela, and how many times you just take it and like it, and just it's part of the experience. You know, sometimes I'm like, what? Like, we're skating like 10 laps, like morning skate. You're like, why are we doing this? It's always like, take it and like it. It's part of the experience, and that you have to go there with the right attitude. And that's what we did, and it worked out very well.
That's awesome.
No breath work for the Russians.
Not yet, I guess. We smoke a lot of shisha. That Kalyan. That was the breath work down there, I guess. But it was just the restaurants and everything. It was a fun time.
I can imagine. Yeah, it sounds like it's a mixed bag of reviews. You know, it sounds like you guys hit it big time. Especially bringing your family over there, which is a lot of people don't do.
No, but you have to you have to choose your teams when you go there. You know, right. You can't just go there blindly and whatever. It's like I called all the imports, called the coaches, called did you play there? Ex players, and we like Lokomotiv was just A1, and Omsk was just A1. They're a wealthy team that take care of the players, and it was like NHL. You know, it's like, except the first trip you play in China, it's 10-hour flight. That's like, you're like, whoa, what's going on there? But it was a small NHL, and it was very valuable for as an experience.
We had Josh Gratton on. Gratz was on with us, and he played over there, but he played for that guy that's a rodeo that carries the guns.
Yeah,
well, I mean, and your boy Darcy Varroa was over there for a while, right? Like, you played with Darcy, right?
No, I didn't play with Darcy.
Oh, you didn't play with him. My bad.
Him. Yeah.
Oh, okay. He was in Scranton. He was probably after.
I think it was.
You.
I think it's before.
Oh, before? Yeah, oh, my bad. My bad. Before you? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So this was the team where they get bonus for every fight. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I heard rumors about it.
He told us a couple of seasons. This guy was crazy. He basically say, I want you to grab a goalie and pound him, or you're not getting paid, or something to that effect, right, Riles? And so he said, I'm not grabbing a goalie. So he grabbed some other poor bastard and just beat the shit up, because guys, the owner's got guns, man. He's walking around with guns like he's Billy the Kid, man.
Yeah. Well, there's some of that in Russia. But, I never felt threatened once. You know, we'd walk in the street with the stroller at 9:10 p.m. Like, and for us, the owner, he was a friend of Putin, the first owner in Yaroslav. And, we had some good talks and really good conversation. And they're very, very proud people.
Yeah.
And they're straight. And it's got to work. And it's, I respect that. I respect that.
Yeah, that's Proby's hometown. That's why he wanted me to. He knew you played there, so he wanted me to ask you about that.
Yeah.
So you win a cup, man. Not only do you win a cup, you score 2 goals in Game 7. Talk about a dream come true for any kid. I don't care if you're American, Canadian, anywhere you are, to play in a Stanley, to play in a National Hockey League. But for you, you get Game 7, 2 goals, man. Like, what a feeling, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's still surreal, but take away the 2 goals, and it's really about just winning the cup to start. I was lucky enough to perform in the big game, it's great, but we win the game 2-1 and Sid scored 2 goals. It's the thrill is the same,
right?
Stanley Cup champ and Game 7, and you go out there and you feel like you're because the first goal as a hockey player, every year you put an objective, and at one point you get junior, you get drafted, and you're like, okay, I want to play one game. I'll remember when I got that, and I was at the Mellon Arena, and you're going to play the first game of the season, you get in the locker room, there's Sid, there's Mario, John LeClair, you get in the locker room, you play against the Devils. That's the first objective, I feel, for every hockey player. Like, you played on the show, you know. Then after that, you're like, yeah, what's next? Well, it's to win a Stanley Cup. So, you know, 2008, we got very close. We lost game six in the finals. But 09 and 07, you win. And it's just like, okay, like you achieved the biggest dream. Like, you know, you play in the streets, whatever. And to live that emotion with your family. My parents were there, my brothers. It's just, I feel it's what you play for, basically. It's and after that, you're like, you know, a week after, you're in Miami with Sid and Malkin, and you're like, what's next? What's my new objective? What's my new dream? You know, it's like, let's go with another one, you know. And it's like, the goal changed. To be able to have lived that with the guys, and it changed your life, really. It changed my career. It got me a 5-year contract with the Flyers also, because in big part, back in the days, it was, what have you done? You know, they would sign older guys too as free agent. It's what have you done, not what are you going to do? I think that the contract has changed in the league in the last couple of years, and it's for right reasons, for the most part, you know? It was thrilling. It was amazing.
I couldn't imagine, man. And then you do something no one expects. You sign with the Flyers, man. I mean, and including like us that didn't know you were going to do that. When, you know, I remember someone telling me, I'm like, wait, but Max Talbot, this guy, like, you know, and I got to say this, Riggs, this guy, the first time I met Maxi, you know where I'm going, Max, I go over, we're at the practice rink. It's a day off. We're at the Penguins practice rink. And I'm going over to see the equipment guys, Tags and Dana Heinze. And I walk in and there's no one around. All of a sudden, Max comes out of nowhere, no shirt on, flexing. He's like, oh, flex. You were flexing. His hair is he had the long hair, right? He had the long hair. And he's just looking at me like he wants to, like, kill me. Because I'm like a mid. Like,
what the hell are you doing in my locker?
He's bigger than me. He's bigger than me, right? So he's, like, looking at me. And I'm like, hey, man, what's up? You know, and he's just like, like, gives me the head nod. I'm like, this guy is a dick. All right. I'm like, hey, is it a Dana or Tags anywhere around? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, good talk, bro.
Right. Well, he's got the Flyers gear on.
I know. I'm kidding,
he's
man.
He's got the Flyers gear on. It's the battle.
What am I doing? I'm going to go. What I really was doing was going to go look at your lines for the next day. Right now. I'm kidding. But I was like, this guy's a dick, man. And then I fucking meet him. And when I hit it off right away, and I'm like, I love this man. And I know why you're a favorite everywhere. You, even here, you come from Pittsburgh here, and the fans loved you, your style, the way you played, you're just hard nosed player. Christ, you put 19 G's up your first year here in Philly too. You had a really good year. And
it was one of my favorite year, you know, like as much as, you know, I spent 6 years with the Penguins, which, you know, when I look back at my career, it's like I'm a Pittsburgh Penguins, in all honesty. And for fans like that are watching this on YouTube, you know, I got the Penguin shirt, but I just got to show that the Flyers there also, you know, just for fans watching, you know. It's like, yes, I'm a Penguins deep down because I won. And that changes, you know, it's like, you know, even junior, you win a championship. We still have a group chat with all the 2009 guys. But as soon as I signed with the Flyers that year as a free agent, it was a very tough decision, but I came there to win. You know, I had other opportunities on the table as a team, and I looked at the lineup and I'm like, where am I going to, if I leave the Penguins that every year I have a chance to win, where am I going to go?
Right.
And the Flyers was my pick because, you know, I wanted to win. I believed in the leadership, and that summer they signed, you know, Jags and Brizgalov, which was, you know, it didn't work out as it should have, but he was the biggest free agent on the market that summer. And that year, I tell you, we had so much fun. We beat the Pens in the first round. How great was that? Yeah. You know, as a Flyer.
I mean, like, especially,
that
I know.
Series was freaking amazing.
It was
like it was nuts, and like you said, you know, scoring 19, and I felt everything was, you know, just Yags was just amazing that year too, you know. He was in the zone, he was playing with Hartsey and G, and I feel like it was a very, very good, the energy was great around the team that year. It was
awesome, and us end up playing them, and remember the shit show before we even got to the playoffs. I mean, it was nuts because we played them a couple times at the end, and we already knew we were playing them in the first round. And I mean, Yeah, we've talked about this with the other people we've had on, man. That was crazy. I can't imagine, like, you going from, you know, you've been in Pittsburgh your whole career with that organization. Now you're on this side of it, and you're even getting into it with friends, you know, like, and there's no friends really when you're playing a game, but they're friends, you know. It's wild, man.
I would get into scrums, you know, and just old guys. I was not gonna, I mean, if it would have happened, I mean, we saw brothers freaking fighting or, I would have went for it. Like, but still, it was harsh. And when Sid said, you know, I don't like any of these guys in that dressing room. And, and seriously, that hurt. Like, I was like, come on, man.
He was just pissed, man.
I was like, come on. We played 6 years together. We have so many memories and you don't like anyone in that team. So, but still, it's like, you know, so I became a Flyer. And that's when I was like, you know, the first day I got in the Flyers rocking room, I was one. And when I came back to Pitt, that first game also was December, I think, something, when they did that little stuff in the Jumbotron. And that to me was like, okay, now, like, I'm a Flyers. The fans in Pitt kind of accepted it because they were clapping and the tribute. Like, so I was like, I can just go on from that story, you know, because it is a story. It's a story that people create and everything. Yeah, it was not easy to take that decision. But at the same time, I always like a good challenge.
Yeah, man, it was awesome. And you know, along with you, it's a really hard decision for you. And think about Yogs too. I mean, everyone expected him to sign in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And I remember him doing an interview and saying, sometimes, you know, it's not what you think. It's a challenge. And you know, I feel like this is the place. And like you said, we had a great year. I thought we were going to do a lot more damage. I think we got a little cocky. Maybe, you know, like we had the, you know, we win that series and then we go to the concert with, what do you call with the, like, I think, no, the, we went in between cause we had like 4 or 5 days. So we went to see the Canadian band,
Nickelback.
We go to see Nickelback. everybody makes it. Yeah, they pull these guys up like him and Schenner firing water guns into the crowd. Like we won the cup, you know. that had nothing to do with us losing. I'm kidding, but everybody was like, "Oh, maybe we got a little cocky." But we went up 1-0. We won in overtime. Danny B scored a goal in overtime, and then we got swept. After that, it was five games. I mean,
but the Devils went to the finals.
Yeah, they did. It wasn't like they were a bad team either. Yeah. They were a good team, but
they were not supposed to be that good. You know, that's the thing that got, like, they played so well defensively. They were not that flashy team. Like, how did we lose against the Devils? It was very disappointing. Yeah. But then they ended up going to the finals. So you're like, okay, that's why we lost, because they were a good hockey team.
Yeah.
But yeah, seasons like that is disappointing. You're right, because I feel after we bit the pants, we're like you said, we're invincible.
I mean, you know, I just thought you guys, we had a great year. I mean, we had a great year, you guys. Mm-hmm. And you remember we did the outdoor, the thing where HBO was following us around. My son watches that. I hear it all the time because he's just watching it. And one of the things I was going to ask you about was Lavi. You know, they were showing a scene where we were in Dallas and he's just losing. He's like, I want you to rip your fucking hearts out, you know, and he's good. And they go over to you and Reno's sitting beside you, and Reno looks like he's 16 and they show Simmer, and then they go over to Yogs and he's just like rubbing his eyes because Lavi's losing his mind. But what'd you think of Lavi? Like, you know, he really liked you.
Well, I enjoyed Lavi. I think it was a great motivator. And for me, to lead the Penguins, which was a very, very, very structured system. You know, like when you see guys getting traded, the Pittsburgh, when Dan Bosma was there, it's always very tough to get guys at the trading deadline and try to have success. James Neal had trouble scoring, you know, Kovalev, like in those years, they have Morrow after, Douglas Murray. They signed a bunch of guys, like, and they could never really have success because it was a very, very complicated with a lot of details system. I got to Philly that first year, and you know, you sign a 5-year contract and you're like, you feel and you know that they sign you because you won and because of your leadership attribute, and you get there, you're like, how can I make a difference? You want to, you know, bring what they signed you for. And at the start, it was really like, okay, like you get into a locker room that already has their leadership group. You know what? Artsy was there and Prongs was there that year and G and, you know, everybody was there. And it's great. Chemo and you try to fit in and then you try to bring your stuff. And that year was amazing. And Lavi was there, but his system, like we said, it was my career year. Scored 19 that year.
Yeah.
But for me, it was the release of really being structured. So I was like, okay, I got a little bit more liberty. You know, sometimes it's good to have a structured system because you play faster because guys know where it's going to go. But sometimes it's good to feel that you can create and be free. And to me, it brought me back to maybe my junior years where, you know, you score 100 points. I had a little skill, not as, you know, the high skilled guys, but I was able to score that year and being in position with G on the PK, scored a bunch of PK goals. And sometimes, you know, I got power play shifts. And so it was more of like a freedom in a way after having all this very, very structured role and system, playing fourth, third line in Pittsburgh, got there, played with Voracek most of the year. One of the best passer in the league, obviously. So it was, I enjoyed Lavi. I enjoy his, you know, his speech and his motivation. And, you know, he was a fun coach to play for.
Yeah, I enjoyed him too. We talked about this a few weeks ago, him bringing in like a box and set it in the room, like whatever's in here, you know, if you're the best after this five games and whatever, you know, and everybody's like, what the fuck's in this box this time? You know, and like Ryle said, he gave us all Snuggies or whatever them damn things are called. Those things for Christmas. Like, what are you doing? Are you up all night watching infomercials? Like, the only place you can get that stuff.
Well, but, you know what, Nesty, what I've learned is that the rink should be a destination. You know, it should be something you look forward to and that you'd be excited to go. And that's what he brought, you know, he was comfortable with himself. His wife was very involved too with the wives and stuff. And you make it fun. You make it like something new, something to look forward to. And, you know, that's sometimes like, are we bantam, you know, like, or like midget or junior, but no, it's like, cool. It's even like, we all love free stuff and, you know, games. And, you know, Dan Bosma was a good example. In Pittsburgh, we had Mustache Boy for shootouts.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
You need to create that kind of fun stuff to, like, you know, make it fun. If it's always the same, you don't want to feel like you're going to work. Like you're going to play a sport in the game that you've grown up, like, watching and wanted to be part of. I think that's what Lavi brought.
I agree, man. He even made it fun for us. Like I've said this before. I loved his pregame speeches, man. I like wanted to play, and I don't play hockey, but I was like so fired up, man. Sometimes and it was like, it seemed like they were never the same either. Like it was always something else. It wasn't like he was going in saying the same damn thing, kind of the same message, but always in different ways. And I just thought, I used to get so fired up, man. You don't play your first shift this way, you're not gonna like your fucking ice time, you know, like it just, and you know, like just his intense. And we've talked about this too. I used to give him those pills and he had the Red Bull shots. And drinking eight cups of black coffee from 3:30 till the game started. And some nights, you know, like he would ask me for one of those pills. They were GNC pills. It wasn't like it was drugs, but it was just like a workout thing. And the guys would be like, stop giving him those fucking pills, Nasty. He's fucking losing his mind. You know, like, leave the refs alone. The puck drops. What the fuck? He's yelling at the refs, you know. He gets so red, man. I used to love, like, when whoever would score a big goal, he'd fucking lean in and hit me. Like, damn near dislocated my shoulder the first time he did it. He's the big man. He's not that small.
Oh, yeah. There was passion. Passion there. And most coach, that's their biggest attribute, I think. You know, it's passion for the game, and these guys, they just love it so much. And for them, it's their life. That's what coaching. You need to be passionate. You need to put in the hours and be in there. So he was great at that.
Yeah. You talked about a couple of things there, Max and Nasty, about, you know, his unique coaching style, you know, just keeping it loose, having fun. But the one thing I thought, you know, I liked about Lavi that I'd never, not that I was an offensive guy by any means, but that no coaches that I really have that ever really emphasized such an offensive minded play. You know, you said you're so regimented being in Pitt, and most teams are so structured, like just so overly structured, that it almost inhibits some offensive guys like to flourish, like you said. So I think that's why Lavi has success. Every team he goes, he almost opens up this can of worms where the offensive guys can just be as creative as they want. As long as, you know, you bust your ass back on any, you know, mistake or turnover, you kind of like turns a blind eye, where some coaches are so dead set on, if you turn that puck over, you're not going to play, where he just like allows guys to make mistakes, which like you mentioned it, like it gave you confidence to play and, you know, and kind of go back to the way you were, you know, once structured in junior hockey. You were just kind of like, just play and be creative and have some fun with it.
Yeah. It brings you liberty and confidence. And, you know, a lot of guys have good offensive season, not like the most skilled guys. And it's fun to be part of that. You know, it's a release of, okay, it's a game. It's a game of mistakes. And if you have that trust from your coach that you can turn it over, well, you try it on the blue line. You'll try it. And, you know, it's going to work most of the time. If it doesn't work now and you come back, you bust back, it doesn't cost anything, well, it's just going to give you confidence to do it again after. And I enjoy that from Lavi.
Yeah, I think there's players, and I know there's a couple here in Philadelphia, like that, you know, like Jake, he's a playmaker, man. It's hard for Jake to get to the blue line and dump it in. And I know sometimes you have to. I know there's times in a game, I'm not stupid, I get that. But he gets a lot of shit around here for, well, he turned it over. Well, man, he's trying to make a play. You know, if it ends up in the back of your net, it looks worse. But if it doesn't, I mean, you kind of got to live with guys like that. Like you said, like he's an elite player. He's an elite passer. And he tries to make plays, and, you know, he's not the only example, but I just, you know, it's like you said, you felt better because you were given a little bit more freedom. And like, look, you scored 104 points 1 year in junior. And I know, you know, a lot of guys, like you said, a lot of guys put points up, but you do have skill. I don't care where you're playing. You put 104 points up. You do have skill. And like you guys said, it's probably a good feeling as players, as you guys were, that, you know, you could try to make a play.
Yeah, well, it's a balance. To me, you have to give guys liberty, like a McDavid, you know. He has a tank of energy, and where do you want him to spend his energy? It's in the offensive zone where he has the puck. So if he's going to give up one because of his lack of, you know, he had a bad stick there or he cheated a little bit there, well, he's going to give you three because he cheated the next time.
Exactly.
But, you know, you have to – not everybody can do that. And
right.
You have the roles player that needs to know when to do it. And at the end of the day, you need that McDavid, when time comes, he's going to come back. Now he's playing in the last 11 games. I think he has 30 – well, in 12 games, he has 33 points now. You know, insane. What pace is that? It's 240-something points if you played 82 games. You know what the record of the NHL is? Wayne Gretzky scored 216 or 10 points. So on the pace he's at of the last 12 games, and I watched him last night, he played against the Habs, and both sides of the puck. And it's a game that doesn't matter to them. They are, you know,
right
at the second in the North Division. So he is playing the right way. He just doesn't have anybody else to play with. But that's something I said, Draisaitl. But meaning that, you know, he doesn't have the support, so he needs to do everything every night. But to come back to that, you know, liberty of how I felt, same thing in Pittsburgh, let's say. But when you have your leadership, that most of the time will do the right action. And if he messed up, well, he's going to come back. But not only that, if once in a while he goes and hit a guy or block a shot, or that brings so much energy to the rest of the guys. You know, like Sidney Crosby, I know in Philly, everybody hates him. But, God, he plays the game the right way, right?
He's
doesn't
awesome.
Just play the skill game, right? He's going to play. He could be the best penalty killer in the league if it was his role.
Right, yeah.
He's aware and, you know, he's around the net and he works hard. So when you have that kind of leader and for that amount of time in Pittsburgh, it's contagious. And that culture, leadership, is not just when he's on the ice. If you're strong enough as a leader, well, when he's going to leave in 5-6 years, hopefully 10 years. But, you know, when he's going to leave, because he's such a good and strong leader for so many years, that culture would stay in Pittsburgh for a couple of years after that. You know, it might dissipate after a while, but, you know, that's the role of a good leader. But, you know, it's what he brought to Pittsburgh. And who did he learn from? It's Mario Lemieux. He already had it in him. by, you know, playing Rimouski, he was already a great leader, you know. But then Mario Lemieux, you know, he lived at his house for 5-6 years. So yeah. Obviously.
Not a bad mentor.
No.
Exactly. You know, he does it the right way.
Good. Yeah. Good. Two good, really good men there too. I was fortunate enough to like kind of get to know Sid a little bit. Not obviously not like you, but the last few years. And I mean, that guy, what a nice dude, man. And I tell people, you know, people are like, oh, okay. I'm like, dude, you don't understand. This guy's one of the nicest people I've met in hockey. Like he's given Elvis two of his outdoor jerseys. You know, he gave his stick the first time he played against Connor McDavid. It had a sticker on it. He signed it for Elvis. I mean, he goes out of his way to do things for people. We have a kid here that was hurt this year, really bad. He broke his neck, and I reached out to Tags and you know, other people did, and I think 3 days later, Pager had a Sid jersey signed, and he wrote him a handwritten letter. And you know, Sid doesn't want anyone to know that, but yeah. That's the kind of guy he is. It literally was in the kid's hands in 2 to 3 days. Wow. You know, and his parents were just bawling, and they were like, I said, well, it's not me, you know, I call it Tags and Tags Talk, you know, and all that stuff. But like Sid, just an unbelievable person. And obviously one of the best players to ever play the game.
Yeah. Well, we'll miss him when he's going to leave. You know, like even for Flyers fan, it's part of the history of the last 15 years. Yes. Yeah. You know, part of it. And we are very, very lucky to be able to witness that in our lifetime. You know, it's like Wayne and Mario and, you know, every era has, but to be able to witness and watch this guy play right now, even if, you know, he's not in Philly, but it's part of, he was part of a lot of the Flyers history indirectly with, you know, remember like when Atcher got him, you remember like, my God, like it was nuts. But these part of the memories that, you know, the Flyers fan have from Sid, and it's part of, you know, Crybaby and this and that. And
yeah.
You know, that's what hockey is. It makes it fun to go watch a Penguins Flyers game because there's that rivalry and because Sid is there and G is there. And it's these were good years too. And, you know, we witnessed that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, going back to what you said, your first game, man, I can't even imagine, like, you walk into a locker room and you have Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby sitting in there. Like, what? Like, that's just got to be like, you got to pinch yourself, right? Like, holy shit, well, man.
I was not super impressed by Sid because he was 3 years younger than me. It was his first game also. But he was a rookie like me. But as for Mario, you know, he's the magnifique. He's such a legend. And you know, just having a chance to go out there and eat at his home and you know, being part there. He would invite, you know, all the French Canadians during camp also. When I was like 18 and 19, I was still playing junior, but during camp, he'd bring us all French Canadian, you know, to his house and wine and, you know, the memories from the cup party with my brothers, you know, whatever, my parents drinking wine in the wine cellar of Mario. And these are, you know, and Mario's got that aura around him, right? You get into a room and you don't even see him yet, but you know there's someone important in the room. He's got really that aura. He's taller than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's really this city got lucky, you know, have him and have him by the team and save the franchise and build a new rink and being around the rink, sitting always at the same seat in this box, watching the game with all these rituals and routine with Pierre Larouche. And, you know, they watch the games and they really care, right? Like, they are superstitious, and Natalie and his wife. And as a player, you feel it too, you know, like, you know, he's there and he's watching. And so it's part of the culture and it makes it great.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, what a pro all around. Can't imagine being around someone like that regularly. You know, I think you've probably seen him probably more than well, I say, I was around Ed Snyder and stuff. But, you know, having someone, you know, you grew up like watching and, you know, you idolize and the whole bit, you know. So you're not just a great hockey player, but a great human. So obviously a great leader. But I was going to ask you, when you first drafted by Pitt, was there an initial conversation of your role within the organization? Because I know you spent, I think, you know, the first year there in 2004-05, which is a lockout, so there was no NHL going on anyway. So you're able to play maybe a little different role, but then eventually you work your way up, and then you kind of found your niche. Was that communicated to you pretty early, or is that something you just had to kind of figure out?
I was pretty lucky that my junior coach, Benoit Groux, is the head coach of the Syracuse Crunch right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The farm team of the Lightning. He was a hard coach, and I was his captain for 2 years, 18, 19, and we said it before, I was a point getter. First power play, I was on the ice for 25 minutes, and I made the World Juniors that season. And you look at the roster, you know, Sid was there, Colburn, Carter, Getzlaff, Perry. We had an amazing team, and we lost in the finals. Unfortunately, Fleury was our goalie. But to get prepared for that tournament, my coach was always telling me every time I do a bad defensive play, I would cheat for offense. Max, you're not going to play in the NHL because you have skills. So already that mindset of, okay, I'm good, but maybe not good enough to do points in NHL, like being a highly skilled guy. So he put that mindset into me, and then I got the Wilkes-Barre. You mentioned it during the lockout, and Michel Therrien was my coach. And for him too, it was about becoming a professional. I was roommate with Alain Ajoudin, assistant coach.
Great man.
Amazing guy. So we bought a house together, and I was 20 years old, and we bought a townhouse in Wilkes-Barre, and we sold it about 3 years ago. We owned it for 10 years, and we sold it for the same price as we bought it for.
No way.
Yeah. Great market.
Yeah, right.
Great real estate. Great move. I lived in the house for like 3 weeks, right? And I owned it for 10 years, and we didn't make really anything on it, but still. So Alain was great, and that whole year you learn to play pro without the pressure of being called up, because there was no hockey in the NHL. So all the young guys were there, and the Penguins sent all their prospects, you know, Fleury, Ryan Whitney, Colby Armstrong, and we had an amazing season. It was so fun, you know. Paul Bissonnette was there the next year, and Matt Murley, and we had a blast.
You ran into a buzzsaw there in the playoffs though. You ran into a buzzsaw in the playoffs though.
We lost
the Phantoms.
That's true. At the old Spectrum, right?
We ended up beating you at the center, right?
We ended up beating you at the center, yeah. It was at the center, the final game that we won. Okay. Game six, I think. It was six games.
Well, we won against the Bridgeport in seven.
Yeah.
And then we lost against you guys.
We ended up winning that year, but we had a good team too. You guys had a good team. They're not a big deal. One thing, Max, it's probably not a great memory, but it wasn't like you got hurt or anything, but I'll never forget, and I feel bad, I can't remember his name, the radio guy in Wilkes-Barre.
Tom Grace.
I can't believe I forgot his name. Dude, I used to like turn around like during a game for like 30 seconds at once in a while to watch this guy's calling a game, and he's just got the arms going and he's fighting when guys are fighting, but to hear his call, I don't know if you heard Jack Edwards last night. I don't know if it was last night, but who's the Finn on the Islanders? He's bounced. He's been around. He played Toronto. So he goes skating by and he butt ends, I guess, Pasternak. And he goes down like he got shot from the top of the, you know, and he didn't even hit him hard. And Jack Edwards is losing his mind. Oh my God, it's a 5-0 game. And, you know, and he like barely touched him. But anyway, reminds me of Tom Grace because there was one episode where we're playing there and Francis Lessard went to every player on the ice and beat the shit out of him. Any guy he could hit. Remember that, Riles? It was when Litz fought Caron.
Well, that was before I was there.
Yeah, it was before, but that's right. Okay, so anyway, if you're listening to it, and Lessard's landed about five punches to someone, and he's going, and he's saying, the Scranton guy just lands all right. And I'm like, well, it's a good thing it's on radio, because it's not what's happening right now. But there was one time where I didn't obviously know you yet, but there was a big fight, and we had more guys on the ice, and I actually kind of felt bad for you.
Ben Eager. Oh my God, I'm still hurt from that.
Oh my God.
My head still hurts.
So I actually kind of felt bad because it wasn't fair. Obviously Eags outweighed you by fucking 30 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big
man. No, 130.
Yeah.
But he was a big guy.
He's a big man. And Tom's calling it, and he couldn't even, there was nothing he could say, but his comment was, and Max Talbot is getting absolutely fed by Ben Eager. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I thought he'd be going, Tom, let's throw it. He's hanging in there, but you couldn't even get a pop. I mean, God bless you, man. Like, you stood there.
It was a scrum.
You could have turtled. You didn't.
I couldn't. There was a scrum. And like you said, there was, so the refs were everywhere. And Ben Eager, and he put me down, and he was nice enough. Like, he punched me down, actually. And then I was down, and I remember just grabbing his leg and crawling back up. And I remember, and I've met him in some kind of prospect game or something from junior. And I remember crawling back up. He's like, Maxie, what are you doing? Stay down. Yeah. Stay down. He was polite enough, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't, dude. I can't. I couldn't turtle, right? So I got back up, and he looked at me, and he was just, you know, I was a rag. Like, he was way too strong for me. And he just grabbed me again, and like, he felt bad.
Yeah.
Again. So at the end, he just left me, and he kind of pushed me away, like, skate, go back.
Yeah,
skate back to your bench. But yeah, that was one of the bad ones.
Yeah, that wasn't good. But I just got such a kick out of Gracie. Like, he always had your guys' backs, man. But it was just nothing he could say. I mean, there was nothing he could say. But he goes, Max Talbot is getting absolutely fed by Ben Eager. I'm like, holy shit, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys had good teams. And that was a good rivalry, too.
Yeah, it was.
You know, as far as American League goes, that was a real, that building was packed.
Oh, yeah.
In Scranton. Christ, it was packed in warmups, man.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite places to go because it was always a huge rivalry, and both teams, you just hated each other, really. And that was, you know, but I had to bring that up, and it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair for you. And I'm not like making fun, but I just thought it was funny how Grace, that was the one time I think he was honest in his call.
Yeah. Well, that year, it was a kind of great timing because it's your first pro year and you have a chance to play in the A, where it's kind of your caliber, right? You don't play against all the superstars. It's all prospect. And remember against Bingo too, we had great rivalry. Bingo was, I had a great team that year, right?
Yeah.
And McGrath on the red line, and you know, with the hair, you looked like the Undertaker, the scariest man I ever played against, I think. You know, you had Ray Emery, like, also like in the net,
right?
Just like walking the red also. I've never seen that. I'm like, dude, like, calm down.
Just hoping you crossed that line.
Yeah,
right?
I was waiting.
Two-handed, you, man. So that was great. And then the second year, I was lucky. I got a camp, and we had Shane Endicott that got hurt, Chris Beach that got hurt. So a spot opened, and I started the year. So the timing was great. And Michelle Terry got the job when Eddie Olchuk got fired. And then first move he did, I thought he liked me. He sent me down to the minors for like 2 weeks. He's like, you're partying too much. Go back down.
You're partying too much. What's that place you took me to in Pitt? It was above your
Mario's. Mario's. Yeah, I lived right behind Mario's, which was
not a good decision, but
it was.
No, I'm kidding.
Good decision.
Lots of fun. Right.
Yeah. Good times.
Oh man, that's awesome.
I was going to ask you when you got traded out of Philly, your initial thoughts of it. I don't think that was expected, but how it was in Colorado. That must have been a nice place to play.
It was great, but, you know, it's kind of a surprise. The second season, you know, it was the lockout year.
Yeah.
And then we came back in January. So you came off of your best career year, you know, go play in Finland and got to Philly in January, and it starts really fast, right? And we had a bad start. We didn't, you know, we lost a lot of right away. We're like, we're not going to make a playoff. And then I remember having that conversation with Paul Holmgren, you know, Max, you know, a lot of teams are calling for you. Just want to let you know that, you know, we're not going to trade you. And I was like, okay, you know, but I feel like I was not convincing enough or something. But he called Pat after, and he's like, it's Max wants out. I'm like, no, but he didn't seem convinced. I'm like, I don't know. We had a conversation, you know, and then I broke my leg the next day, the day before the training deadline, I broke my leg. And then, so I played only 35 out of 48 that year, missed the playoff, and 11 games in the next year, which was, again, a crazy camp where Lavi got fired after 3 games, I think.
Yeah.
Got the job.
Yeah.
So it was a crazy camp. We lost a bunch of games and exhibition. You know, we went to, what was the place? We went to a camp like in Lake Placid.
Yeah, Lake Placid. Yeah.
Was it Lake Placid? Yeah. So then 11 games in, I got traded to Colorado, which Patrick Roy was the coach. And we were a bunch of French Canadian there. And the assistant coach, André Tourigny, kind of came to get me out of the PK. And yeah, Colorado was great. We had our first, my wife was 8 months pregnant when we got traded. We just bought a new house and, you know, like kind of painting the baby's room. And then, I got to meet the team in Dallas after 11 games. And I'm leaving this afternoon. So she got stuck with the baby and, well, not the baby, pregnant. Came to Colorado, and then that was very cool to live that. Like you said, it's a cool place to play, a cool place to live. I mean, it's one best place in the world to live, right. I guess, you know, like practice rink, you know, you got the golf course and the mountains in the background. It's all healthy, you know, it fit with us really. So we got our first kid there and played there 15 months, and they got traded to Boston after that. So, you know, just good memories.
You play, you know, like you're lucky, man. Like you played for four different teams, I believe. All good places, man. Like all good cities. You know, some guys get sent off. I mean, nothing against Winnipeg, but like, you know, you're like, oh man, it was just the weather, probably.
What's wrong with Winnipeg, Nas?
Not, hey, I know Rouse is from there, but you know what I mean. I don't mean anything. Yeah. Hey, listen, that building's packed. It's one of the most electric buildings in hockey. It's smaller. But I mean, that place.
But outside the hockey rink itself.
But outside, you know, it's like, you know, Hazy kind of said to us, man, he was like, dude, it was different, man. You know, he said he loved the fans. He loved, they acknowledged. I can't remember exactly he said they did something really, really nice. They all stood up and did something when his first shift, the whole building stood up and clapped because they had traded for him at the deadline. And he said that part of it was great, but he's like, man, just, I was used to walking downstairs, walking, you know, in New York City, going to get a coffee, hanging out. He's like, man, it was summer and it was snowing, you know, we're in the playoffs and I can't go anywhere to get a coffee. He says, I'm in line. And the guy says, I don't know about some guy in front of him. Oh, did you watch the Jets last night? And the guy's like, yeah. He goes, I don't know about this Hayes guy. And Hayes is standing right behind him. He's like, but anyway,
small market.
But you know, Boston's a cool place, obviously, organization in Colorado, but you got to play in some pretty cool spots, man.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because looking back at my time, you know, leaving the Flyers is like in Philly, I feel fans are so passionate. The media all so very intense. You know, when you're into it, you're like, crap, this is, you know, it's sometimes it gets a little like negative or it's over the top and you're like, but then when I went to Colorado, it's funny, but the first thing I missed was the pressure of Philly. It's playing into a really real hockey market. You know, the Penguins was one thing, the Flyers was another thing. But then you go somewhere else, then there's two beat writers after practice or games, and you're like, "Come on, like
you go home, the rest
you forgot
of
if you won or lost." You know, like you're meaning that it's easy to kind of get your mind off things, which is positive sometimes. But when you like the pressure and you like the, you know, I feel like I miss that, you know, I miss like, you know, being kept accountable for the win and loss. And so, you know, but living there was just amazing. I would move back there tomorrow with the family and, you know, without a second.
I've heard Pierre Belmar is there and he was like, this is like, what a place to live. Like he loves it too. And I've never heard anybody say a bad thing about Colorado, to be honest with you, man. It's funny you say that about the media. Like you got the Florida Panthers, one of the best teams in the league, and you barely hear about it. I don't know how many beat right, like who's covering them. Like that team, they're good, man. I'm sure you pay attention to everything, but you know, doing your TV and all that, but like there's a team that just kind of slides under the radar, man. Like, and they're one of the best in the league. I don't know, who knows what's going to happen. I don't know. The Tampa and them playing, like they had a shit show last night again. I mean, I think that series is going to like be really good, man.
One of the most exciting series.
Yeah. Cause they do not like, they don't like each other, man. Those teams right now. I think it makes it better, you know, like, that rivalry, man.
Well, you have to, I feel like you have to have two competitive teams to have rivalries. And rivalries will be created in playoffs also. If you can be two great teams during the season, you play against each other, but if you never play against each other in playoffs, it's tough to build a rivalry. Yeah. You know, so this year, I feel it's one of the first year that they're really becoming rivals because they're in the same tier. They're same level right now, but when a team is way better than the other one, you can't be rivals because you're not equals.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, true.
And now having them knowing they'll play against each other and playing against each other for the top of the division, it's exciting. And I think it's great for hockey in the South also, you know, like hopefully
I agree.
The fans in Fort Lauderdale will wake up and go to the rinks because it's, and it might be one advantage in playoff for them to not as open rinks and fans, because they probably would have been, you know, more Lightning fans than, you know, Panthers fan in the Panthers building. But yeah, it's great for hockey and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting how this playoffs rolls out here. And I do, I actually really did appreciate the divisional play, because you haven't seen that type of rivalry for like you said, like for a long time. Like you almost think that you're in the playoffs. Some of these games, there's more fights than there's ever been, you know, between like just the annoyances of COVID and then having to play the same teams over and over and over again. It's really built up a nice little platform going into playoffs. So I'm actually kind of excited to see how this thing plays out.
Yeah. There's some good. And then also like for covering, you know, the Habs or whatever, you're like, crap, can we, and we're lucky because we see Matthews and McDavid often, but at one point, like Ottawa, freaking 8-9 times, it's like, come on, like it gets long because you create rivalries, but at the same time, it'd be fun to see Sid and to be, you know, CG and to be McKinnon and to all the other teams. That's what's cool, there's a diversity, but still, it's great to see Matthews, McDavid, like I mentioned. But it's time that playoff starts and they play for something real.
Yeah, I agree, man.
Right on, Max. Well, we appreciate your time. I'm creeping on an hour and a half here, so gonna get you back.
He's,
get back.
He's
to your
a busy man.
Get back.
He's
to
got
your
some
pod.
Breathing to do. Some. You got to talk to Cole today. Get some pointers on shooting the biscuit.
Yeah, seriously, got to go see my wife. My kids.
Right? Busy. Got a lot to do.
No, thanks for your time, guys. It was very cool, you know, going back into memory sometimes, you know, you forget. I dissociate myself completely with a hockey player I was, you know, you're like, that's another life, you know, you move forward, you evaluate, you do other things. So sometimes it's great to look back and just remember how annoying Nasty was, you know, you know, sharpening the skates, but all good. It was a great time.
Yeah, man. I enjoyed you so much. You know that, man. We've stayed in touch and you're a great guy, man. A great teammate. Boys loved you everywhere you were. So
I'll send you your check, bro.
Put an extra zero on it for me, man. My contract runs out in 2 months, I think. So but seriously, man, we really appreciate you joining us, Max. I know you're busy, man. You got a lot of stuff going on. That's awesome.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for the hats and gear you sent me also. I appreciate it.
I promise you it will go out today, man. You're not the only one I owe stuff
priority
to, man.
Nasty.
Trust me. I know, man. Max is my man. I will.
Well, thanks, guys. Thank you, Ross. Appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks, man. Good seeing you, buddy.
All right, brother.
Take care.
That episode was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. For all your hockey and skate sharpening needs, visit SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com and Body Check Wellness. For the weekend warriors looking to help with recovery, inflammation, and any sort of nagging pains, visit bodycheckwellness.com. And want to thank our awesome guest, Max Talbot, for spending the time with us today, Nast. It was a great conversation. Nice to see Max again. What a good guy, good human. Nice to see him doing really well.
Yeah, he is. God, he is one funny bastard, too. Like, he's a great guy, like you said, man. A great career, man. Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
He was just so funny. I think we talked about it, but like watching him when he was with even the Penguin, the baby Penguins in Scranton, you just couldn't stand the guy.
Oh,
but
I remember.
But you know you would you know you would take him on your team.
Oh, of course.
He was an effective. He did his job.
Yeah, really
he
well.
Pissed the other team. Everybody wanted to kill him. It's like, you know, we talked to him about when Ben Eager ended up grabbing him.
Yeah, he did it with a smile on his face too, right? He smacked back around. And
oh my god! And you know, one thing I forgot. Well, I kind of made a gesture to him, but I remember you know, when we were in the playoffs there, and he fought and he got pounded.
Yep.
And then he did this to the Carbom. Carbom, yep, fought him, and he did this. And I'm thinking, dude, what are you doing? Like, you know, it's 3-0. And then, oh my God, what happened, yeah, after that? And you know, people are like, we should have never fought him. And I hate to blame that on us losing the game, because I don't think that's the reason we ended, yeah, up losing.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, it would never have gone that way anyways.
Yeah, I mean, Marty Biron, our good buddy, he had a tough period right after that happened. And but anyway, Max was awesome, and just a God, he's a funny man, really funny guy.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see him, you know, kind of grooming the young, you know, up and coming players with his knowledge. He's been there, done that, and he's got a really good personality. And it's nice to see him kind of being progressive with this, not just being an agent or representative, like legitimately helping these guys out and get ahead, yeah, of the game and get ahead of the curve with some of these training techniques and breathing and then the whole thing he was talking about there. So you know, he looked good, man. He looked like he was in game shape. Does.
He did. He does. He looks good. And honestly, like, he is, if you know Max and you think about, like, it's a great job for him, man.
Yeah. It's
because
beautiful.
He's, you know, he's a smart guy for one, but he's a funny guy. Players, he's the kind of guy, like, he makes it easy to talk to. So yeah, if you're a player and he's your agent, and plus he's doing all the little things for these guys, like you said, helping, like, I couldn't think of a better guy than him, man, because he just knows how to communicate.
You, yeah, know? That's exactly
and,
it.
And he's not too far removed from the game, so he gets it. He kind of played in both eras almost, you know, his first year was, you know, kind of when things started changing, but, you know, he's a little old school. He had the old school in him as well. So it's a good, I think that's a great job for him, being an agent and doing those other little things. Like you said, he'd be very, very good at that. I'm sure he's going to have a good career with that.
Yeah. And the RDS thing with Bruno, you know, another awesome thing. It's like right in his wheelhouse, you know, he gets to have some fun with his buddy and get some airtime and, you know, stay in the game and that side of things. So two things right in his wheelhouse that certainly play into the hands of his personality and character. So
yeah, for sure, man.
Good to see. All right, Nast, that wraps up episode 21.
Yeah.
22. Well,
22. Yeah, 22, man. And we'll start talking about some playoff hockey. Unfortunately, not with our boys, but still going to be interesting. And we'll have some stuff coming up for the people, knuckleheads.
Yeah. For episode 23, we got a big dog coming back on. So looking forward to releasing that.
Yes, we do.
You guys take care. Have a great week. Stay safe. And we'll see you next week. Stay tuned.
See you, knuckleheads. See you, knuckleheads.
See you later.
Howie's got the steel, Settlemar Skate Sherman. Peace.
Peace.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.